like to bring the Environment Natural Resources Conference Committee to order. Thank you all for being here. We'll have Ms. Taylor walk through the bill. Please be patient with Ms. Taylor. I think she's working on less than 2 hours of sleep, I'm sure. So, Ms. Taylor, any questions? Time out. Any questions by the members first? Thank you. Ms. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senate staff can jump in and correct me where I go astray here. I'm working off the conference committee report and the first section, the advisory inspections. This is a bill that had passed the House, carried by Representative Torkelson. And as I understand it, there will be some amendments coming to this section, but it has been added to the bill. Section 2 on page 5, this is a Senate provision regarding permits in the case of a shutdown for DNR. Section 3 was a section that was in both bills. We took the House on this, which did not have the site naming the laws of the Freedom to Hunt and Fish Act. Section 4 was a House provision from a DNR general permits bill. Section 5 was in both bills identically. And this is DNR policy, so was Section 6 on the apprentice riders, and Section 7 on the, just a clarification. And Section 8 was also the same on both sides on service providers, just applying this to additional people. Section 9, I believe there were only some technical differences, and we took the Senate. Section 10, was identical, an AIS clarification on both sides. Section 11, same thing. Section 12, again, another AIS identical provision. Section 13, I believe this was another identical section that we've taken. And then on Section 14, the Senate had some additional language that was worked out with counties and watershed districts, I believe, so we've taken the Senate language on this section. Section 15 was identical on both sides on the civil penalties. Section 16, another DNR provision that was identical on both sides. Section 17 and 18, these were House provisions on the providing an additional option for disabled people to prove their disability for park permits. Section 19 was a DNR provision that was identical on both sides, as was 20. And then on Section 21, this is the new AIS prevention program with the trailer decal. We have taken the Senate language with a modification. You'll see that on line 18.6 to 18.7. Violations cannot result in a penalty, and they can only be enforced by a warning. Section 22 is a technical clarification from DNR that was identical on both sides. Section 23 was a House provision on just providing some fairness in the minerals management account for other taxing districts. Section 24, I believe this is a provision from the House on the general permits. Section 25, excuse me. This is a DNR provision on violations that was identical on both sides. Section 26, I believe, was a DNR provision that was identical on both sides. Section 27 is part of the PCA policy, a whole bunch of sections consolidating reporting, and this was identical on both sides. We've taken that. Section 28 is the first of a number of sections on local water management that was identical on both sides. So that would include 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, I think 33, and then Section 34. No, yep, 34 as well, 35, 36, 37, and 38. And then on the bottom of page 26, there were some Senate-only provision regarding the removal of logs, and we've taken those. So that'd be Section 39 and 40, and I believe there's some later on as well. And then Section 41. This was part of the Wetland Conservation Act, and this was identical on both sides regarding the deed restriction. And then on Section 42, this was the Senate provision on swamp busters. It has been modified, and you'll see that on lines 32.5 through 32.7, and there's also some additional language on 32.1 and 32.2. Section 43 is the de minimis provision, and we took the House language with some modifications. The seven county metro changes have not been included, so those have been gone back to current law. And then Section 44, this is a Senate provision that has been taken. It's escaping me what it does right now. Section 45, this is another provision on the WEC on the 80% that was identical on both sides, as was Section 44 on the Section 404. This is identical on both sides. Section 47 is another provision on the log removal that was accepted from the Senate side. Section 48 was the House, another general permit section that was taken from the House. Section 49 and 50 were Senate provisions that we've taken regarding large water use appropriations. Section 51 is another general permit provision. Section 52 is a Senate provision that has been modified regarding monitoring wells, and you'll see the new language on 37.18 and 37.20. Section 53 is another general permit provision that was taken from the House, as was 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, and 59. And then on page 40, Section 60 is another PCA reporting consolidation that was identical on both sides, as was 61, 62. And then 63 was on the Senate side, and I believe the House had a separate bill that was carried, but the language was identical, so we've adopted it here. The Section 64 is a modified version of a House provision that consolidated some reports, and this language was provided by the PCA to help clarify that. Section 65 is another reporting section that was identical. Section 66 and 67, and I believe one of these sections, there was a technical clarification. I think it was this section, but I could be mistaken. Section 68 was identical on both sides on the recycling goals. 69 is another reporting requirement that it was identical, as was 70. And this, the next section, it's the real language starts on the top of 48, the land disposal prohibited. This was a Senate provision on, taken one of the sections on the Senate side regarding the use of recycled tires. Section 72 is another reporting change. This is what moves it to the public safety, and this was identical on both sides, as Section 73 is another reporting section that was identical. Section 74 was a Senate provision, and this is the PCA equivalent of the DNR provision we saw earlier regarding permits in the case of a shutdown. Section 75 was another PCA policy on swine basins that was identical. Section 76 is a planning reporting change, and that was identical, as was 77. And then 78 is a House provision. There was a number of things that were happening that had already been enacted in law, but there was one place that had not been enacted yet, and you'll see the new language on 5132 through 5136, providing alternatives for publishing in the EQB monitor, and that has been accepted. And then skipping ahead to page 54, section 79, this was a House provision that requires, does not, you know, tries to remove duplicative information between permits and environmental worksheets. Section 80 is a technical correction that the reviser brought forward that cleans up some language, a missed reference in the permitting bill, and you'll see the change on line 5525. Section 81 is another PCA reporting change that was identical, as was 82, and 83, I believe, was a House-only, just technical clarification, or I could be mistaken on the section. I know one of them was. That could be also section 84, but again, these are for the reporting clarifications, as is 85. And then 86, I believe this was identical in both sides, removing a report. Section 87, again, the DNR had requested some clarification on a previous appropriation, and this was identical on both sides, if I remember correctly. Section 88, this is some language clarifying hunting on the LaSalle Lake State Rec area that was identical. Section 89 is the House legislative report on state parks, and that has been accepted. Section 90 is the LCCMR extensions that was identical on both sides. Section 91 is a modified version of a House provision regarding on the city of Elk River. It's now been brought in to apply to all the grants. The Section 92 was some rulemaking that was necessary for the EAW EQB monitor change that was accepted on the House. Section 93 is a lottery in lieu extension that was being carried in the House. Section 94 is a Senate provision on the Forest Resources Council study that has been accepted. Section 95 is a modified version of the Metro Waste Disposal Restriction Report that was in the Senate side. Section 96 is a review that has been agreed to by the agency on the MPCA Citizens Board, and this is in lieu of the MPCA Citizens Board changes that the House was carrying. Section 97 this is the rulemaking for the EQB monitor that was necessary for the House provision.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, actually it's the alternative local standards, the part that's in here for the SSTS systems.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, sorry.
Ms. Taylor.
And then Section 98 is a contingent repeal of a, it looks like, legacy Article 4, Section 2. And this is in the case of there's $1 million that's being taken from the Environment Trust Fund and then being backfilled by some appropriations. So this would take care of that if that doesn't happen. And then Section 99 is the repealers. I believe the major differences are the exception of the House provisions to repeal the boat trailer or the boat decal from last year. You'll see that on paragraphs B 65 through 11 and 65 through 12. And then the laws 2001, Chapter 107, Section 105, and then the rest of the repealers sort of reflect the policy decisions that we went through in the bill already. I'd stand up for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Just a little further explanation on Section 98, the second to the last page of the bill. If you're wondering about the $1 million, it references the legacy bill. That's $1 million of research for the University of Minnesota, most likely to do the research on AIS, and that's really to make that work. That is built in with a fee increase that will be discussed later tonight in conference committee and potentially be available for passage yet in the next couple of days. If for some reason that does not take place, that money would not be available, and it would put the Game and Fish Fund in jeopardy. And so that's why this is in the way it is. Members, questions on the bill as presented by Ms. Taylor? Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 32, at the near the top of the page, on line 32.5, I have an oral amendment.
Representative Torkelson, to your oral amendment, page 32, line 5 beginning, I believe.
Yes. Line 5, page 32, would like to change the first "and" to "under." We've talked this over with a variety, with some folks that are interested in this particular issue and feel that that change in language makes the intent of this paragraph much more clear.
So, Representative Torkelson, if I was to start on line 32.2, federal program restrictions under memorandum.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Questions to the Representative Torkelson's oral amendment. Mr. Knopf. Well,
Mr. Chair, I'm worried that it doesn't quite read right then, because...
Representative Torkelson.
Excuse me, I just want to kind of just explain, because if you look at the first part on 30.1, it's subject to the swamp buster provisions of the federal program restrictions, and then you would have under a memorandum. They're not under a memorandum.
Representative Torkelson, do you want to withdraw your oral amendment and for a second, or are you okay? Go ahead, Representative Torkelson.
We seem to have a... I'm not bringing this forward myself. Others that misunderstood the original language felt this made it more clear. Perhaps I need to have further discussions with some folks that are interested in this issue. I will withdraw my oral amendment at this time.
Okay. Representative Torkelson withdraws his oral amendment. Discussion to the bill. Representative Dill.
17, section 21. It's on AIS.
Representative Dill.
I'm looking at line 18.6 on page 18. It says violations of section shall not result in a penalty, but is only punishable by a warning. So, does that mean the effective date, they can't start giving warnings until July 1 of 2015?
Representative Dill, Lieutenant Colonel Smith, I thought I saw you in the audience, didn't I? Are you here? If you could work your way up. My understanding, Representative Dill, that this would be enforced similar to current Blaze Orange law. Is that in regards to small game hunting? I would imagine Blaze Orange is required in current law, but is not enforceable with a fine. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
I think that's my question.
Your question?
My question is that if there's no penalty except a warning, it says the effective date of this section being July 1, 2015. Why wouldn't we want to have that effective upon adoption?
Representative Dill, the fishing trailers have a number of years involved, and so it's allowing that cycle to come through. Maybe Director Hirsch would be better to answer that part. I misunderstood your question.
Okay.
Director, if you could identify yourself for the record to Representative Dill's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological and Water Resources Director. I'm not sure if this is the same issue that Representative Dill is bringing up, but I think it's similar. The concern, as I read this now, with as long as we've got the provision that we can't issue a citation for violation, it's just a warning. I think the original intent of the effective date was to make sure we didn't enforce this and give any tickets prior to this date. But now the way I read it, it could be interpreted to mean that we can't do any of the things in that section, or we can't start any of the things in that section until that date. So it would seem like we probably don't, for clarity, we probably don't even need that effective date anymore because we've got the warning provision covered. But
Senator Engelbrightson.
Mr. Knopf, comment on that.
Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the language will still be here for them to start this. Let's just make sure, because otherwise you're going to be issuing warnings this summer for people who don't have a training that doesn't exist yet. It doesn't prohibit them from doing any of these things in the process if they want to get stuff ready. It's just make sure that the requirement doesn't take effect until then. I mean, I don't know if you want to warn people for something that they can't get yet.
And Director Hirsch, isn't there a rotating basis conceivably for these trailers? I'm assuming once you get your program up and running, some of these trailers actually have life. I don't know if some of these are small enough to have lifetime licenses, but some are multiple year, so they're going to get renewed in different times. And I don't know if you're going to reach out to all the folks broadly, or if you probably don't even know. I don't mean to belittle you, but we're just passing this. You probably haven't figured out exact implementation, so maybe the effective date does work. Director Hirsch.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll defer to Mr. Knopf's interpretation of it. Just my concern was when I read it literally, if the whole section isn't effective till July, I just want to make sure that doesn't inadvertently mean that we can't start developing the program, and because that this is the section that gives us the authority to do all that. So that was my concern.
Representative Deal.
Well, so let's say that you bought the sticker today, tomorrow, and you had your training, whatever it's required, and you had that on your trailer. That means that they couldn't give you a warning if you were in violation the day after tomorrow. Do I understand that correctly? They still have to wait to give the warning until July of 15th. So let's say you bought a brand new boat today, brand new trailer, you went and bought all your stuff, you did everything you're supposed to do, and you went in the lake and you pulled out a bunch of milfoil and you were sitting on the thing, started driving out, and they can't give you a warning until July 1st of 15th? Or tell me, I want to make sure I understand all that.
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dill, this just says that the requirement to have the sticker is not effective. All other invasive species laws would apply. If they're in violation, they can actually issue penalties for that. This is just for the sticker requirement. If you wanted to make Mr. Hirsch completely happy, the other option you have here is you could say Subdivision 4 is effective July 1, 2015, if you want to. I mean, that's another option. I don't think it's a problem if the language is there. They can still go ahead and start this stuff. But if he has some heartburn over that, you could just say Subdivision 4 is effective July 1, 2015. I mean, this was the department's language coming in. So,
Representative Dill, I think you make a good question. We want to have people get this sticker as soon as possible. So I want to make sure that where you have an opportunity, Director, we're capitalizing on that and working through those folks as soon as possible on the renewal. Why don't we assume we're okay the way it is, and Council, Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chair, then if that's the intention and you want to make them very comfortable, I would think instead of on 18.8, instead of this section, I would put in Subdivision 4 is effective July 1. And the rest of it, then 1 through 3, the development of the decal and passing out the decal and contracting for services, they can all start doing that now. If there's some concern that they wouldn't have the authority for that, that would take care of it.
I'll move Mr. Knopf's recommendation on line 18.8. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The oral amendment's adopted. Did I see another? Representative Torkelson, you're not ready yet.
I am ready, Mr.
Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A12 amendment. I don't know if the copy's been passed out yet.
No, but you could begin to explain it. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A12 amendment would replace the first portion of the bill, Section 1. And this is the advisory inspections bill that passed off the House floor. It had been in process in the Senate. I'm the chief author in the House. Senator Gazelka is the chief author in the Senate. We have been doing some slight edits to this during the day. And I do have an oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson moves to amend his A12 amendment with the following oral amendment. Representative Torkelson.
On page 2, line 2.27, the very first word in that line should be sections, plural, instead of section, singular.
Representative Torkelson moves to add an S after the word sections, first word in the line 2.27. Representative Torkelson, why don't you incorporate that into your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson, you're moving to delete all of Section 1 that goes members up to and including line 5.16 of the of our conference committee report.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the A12 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Representative Torkelson, were you ready yet for your previous oral amendment?
I believe we are going to drop that oral amendment, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions. One for clarification to be clear. The aquatic invasive species decal we're talking about on page 17, there is no cost to that. Is that correct?
Representative Anderson, I think we should bring Director Hirsch back here on how that program is going to work and how it's going to be paid for. Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, members, our intent would be to have the online course developed through a consultant contract, and we have, not in this bill, but we have authority to authorize the consultant to charge for the cost of developing the course. So they would charge for the cost of developing the course. People that were taking that course, there would be a charge, you know, that the consultant would be able to charge against the person taking it.
Director Hirsch, do you have any idea what those fees may be?
Mr. Chairman, I do not at this time.
Questions for Director Hirsch? Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. I was talking about the decal itself, but evidently there's a course to take before the decal is issued, so I'd like some idea as to what this whole process may cost a boat owner.
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I was talking
okay.
with Mr. Meyer, Meyer there.
Mr. Meyer and Director Hirsch, Representative Anderson's question is just to elaborate a little bit more on the program that's involved with getting the decal on your boat trailer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, our intent would be to have a consultant develop an online course. So we try to keep it pretty simple and brief, but fairly complete. And then a person that was pulling water-related equipment on a trailer then would be required to take that course, and then upon completion of the course, they would get the decal or multiple decals if they had multiple trailers that would allow them to be able to pull the trailer and display the decal. And Mr. Meyer was mentioning to me, I want to point out that we would repeal the other sticker requirement and it is in the repealer, the one that was passed last year with the passage of this new language. So.
Yes, Director Hirsch, that is in the repealer section. Director Hirsch, I'm beginning to understand also why the effective date. So how soon would the soonest be that boat trailer folks would see in their renewal? Is that at the time when a person did his boat renewal? Once you've got this implemented, you'll get with your – normally that would be a rather small envelope. Is it going to then give them a website or something that they'll go to and identify as part of the boat trailer application? They will also have the decal or the fee, or you're going to have that as a surcharge, or how will that be done?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't really thought through some of those details yet. We were thinking that we would try to connect it somehow with the boat registration, but there might be other opportunities, too, for them to get it. We don't necessarily want to tie it only to the boat registration, but we haven't worked out some of those details yet.
Director Hirsch, do you have the authority to implement that fee without legislative action, or are we giving you legislative action right here, giving you that authority?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that we've got the authority when we do a contract with a consultant to authorize that consultant to charge for the service of providing that online course.
So, Director Hirsch, just so I understand, the fee would only be for the cost of doing that. It's not going to be a fee to cover the aquatic invasive species work that would be more appropriately paid on some kind of a different fee.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. So, Representative Anderson, I think that gets to your point. So, Director Hirsch, if I'm understanding you correctly, we are not anticipating this to be a large fee. It's just going to be the cost for this relatively short, I would imagine, some kind of online course that folks would take.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's what I'm anticipating. And we can even, when we develop the RFP, too, I mean, that's something that we can work into the RFP is to get an idea of how efficiently this can be done by the contractor, because we're very interested in keeping the cost down, too.
Thank you. Additional questions to the bill members? Representative Anderson, you're all right.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Just one additional question. This one is on page 13, lines 13.5 to 13.20, I guess. And just maybe I'm missing something, but the commissioner may authorize tribal or local governments to do some of these inspections. But the next paragraph says they would assume all financial responsibilities to do that. Why would a local government choose to do that without any financial reimbursement and taking on all the responsibilities?
Good question. Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, they may not, but we have had some interest in local government units that want to do this. So we want this. If a local unit of government decides that they want to take some of this on and partner with us, then, you know, it would have to be at their cost. I mean, we, you know, it's possible that we would offer a grant as part of the agreement and, you know, help defray the costs, but it's not that we're requiring local governments to do this at their own cost. It's that we're giving them the option of doing that if they want to.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Just one more. Would a lake association qualify as a local government unit?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, no. We are strictly keeping the authorization to other local units of government. Lake associations can get grants to have volunteers that go out and do information and education type contacts at public accesses, but we do not want to authorize lake association people to be able to tell people they can't launch their boat and things like that.
Senator Ingraham.
Thank you. Mr. Hirsch, is it not true that local government, local lake associations cannot form a LGU taxing authority? Can they do that by statute?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, there is an ability to form a lake improvement district. I am not up on all the details of that, but then that would be a local government unit. Then it would no longer be a lake association.
So that would.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Maybe Mr. Knopf, would that qualify then for them if they were to do that? I know there's been talk about that with regards to this, an awful lot of activity going on.
Mr. Knopf, and Lake Minnetonka, I was thinking, may qualify for that already, or am I wrong? Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Gibbertson, yes. I mean, they could form a LID or a Lake Improvement District, and they do have certain authorities, and they have to be approved before they're formed, and they have certain powers. This doesn't define local governments in here, so that would be up to the agency's interpretation of local government. I think we just heard the agency's interpretation. And both White Bear Lake and Lake Minnetonka have special legislation forming them as a special purpose local government unit. So, again, since local government, if I remember right, this is in Chapter 8048, I don't recall a definition of local government. So this would be up to the interpretation of the agency as to what local governments could be authorized to do this.
Thank you. Okay. Additional questions, members? Okay, I think we have some additional amendments, and don't we have some deletion oral amendments too? Ms. Taylor, could you let me know? I'd like to move an oral amendment to remove. There's some provisions in here, I believe, in a couple different spots related to continuing sale of fishing and hunting licenses and timber permits in the unfortunate situation of a government shutdown. I'd like to move an oral amendment to delete those. It's my understanding the administration would rather not have them in the bill. We want to get this bill signed.
Mr. Chair, members, the first section would be Section 2 and Section 5. This is the DNR permits. And then, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, did you also want the game and fish license section as well? That would be the next section 3.
Ms. Taylor, just to clarify, it's Section 2, page 5. Mm-hmm. The deletion of that section,
yep.
And then it is one second, Ms. Taylor. Okay, Ms. Taylor, I'd like to move the oral amendment to delete that section two. Discussion? Mr. All those in favor? Go ahead.
Excuse me, is this?
This is just the permitting one. Do you want to hold off on this one? Representative Ingraham,
we should have a little discussion about this. I don't think we're going to discuss
okay, before. I'll withdraw my oral amendment. Additional discussion to the bill at this time? Get any more? No. You know what? I think we're going to have a short recess, members. Let's, wait, there's a heck of a shadow there. Is that 8 minutes after 6? We're going to reconvene at 6:25.